I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. So much to get into in this, the third hour of the show, including the continued fallout of the Houston Astros cheating their way to the 2017 World Series. Nick Markakis saying yesterday, and in fact making the rounds again in the media today with more pointed comments, but that the Astros deserve a beatdown. They're going to get hit a bunch. How much before baseball steps in? Dusty Baker's already pleading, basically, that they're not allowed to be hit by pitches any more than any other team. We'll see about that. Craig Lachlan of the Capitals is on the show at 12:45. You hear him and see him on NBC Sports Washington as the color commentator of their telecast. But let's get to our Beltway Blitz. Three teams you care about in one segment every single day to kick off the 12 o'clock hour. Start with the latest news and notes on the Redskins with J.P. Finley of NBCSW. J.P., and Tom, you can punch him up for me. I want to know about this Jordan Reed situation. It sounds as though Jordan Reed is going to be released, but not until he passes his physical. Do they have to wait, or are they just waiting to be nice?
I don't really know. I don't think I reached out to a number of agents over the weekend just to kind of get a better idea of what they have to do, and they could release him today. They could release him at any point. It is entirely possible that if he's released while he's still injured and can't clear concussion protocol, that he would be entitled to a $1.2 million injury protection, I guess, bonus, or however you want to view the money, and that's a negotiated part of the CBA. And then if there are any injury guarantees in his contract, he'd be due those. But in the last year of a deal of a 5-year contract extension, that would be it's a very, very slim chance that there are injury guarantees still in his deal. So, yes, the Skins can release him. One agent I texted with said, honestly, it would be like what the Seahawks did with Richard Sherman a few years ago. It's not that uncommon. This thing is going to end. It's really just a matter of when. And I think there's a way for the Redskins to take the high road and still move on. The previous regime did far too much of dragging things out. I think already with the release of Josh Norman and Paul Richardson, you see that Ron Rivera is not in the dragging things out business. And I think this Jordan Reed thing, you should really look to have finished before free agency opens, obviously. But I mean, I kind of think you can get this done by the end of this week, maybe next week at the combine, but there's no reason to let it linger.
Jake Plummer, Finley, what are they going to do at quarterback? It seems if Haskins, obviously, is your one seed at this point, is it veteran to compete or veteran to back up, or just a guy from that clear backup tier to come in here and work?
That's one of the biggest wild cards, Danny, and I don't know. And I've heard people make the Phil Rivers conversation because Rivera was with him in San Diego and those Chargers teams are really good. I read Tom Curran in Boston. I read his column on Brady this morning, and he put the Redskins in there as a possible Brady pursuer. I don't think they go after either of those guys. My gut tells me it's going to be Dwayne and a guy that's clearly a backup or a guy that shouldn't push Dwayne anyway, even if it's a guy like Case Keenum, who I don't really see coming back here, but somebody of that tier. I don't know. I think Dwayne has this time to try to impress them and make it clear they don't need anybody else. Because Ron Rivera, if you look at his track record in Carolina, he's willing to play young players and take the lumps. But he needs young players that are all the way in, that are practicing and leading and being teammates in the vision he sees. I don't know that Dwayne was that guy last year, but I think there was a whole lot going on there where Dwayne gets to reset everything as well and now has a coaching staff that is laying things out much more clearly for him.
Greg Olson right now is one of the best color commentators in the industry. I was watching him this weekend call an XFL game with Kevin Burkhart. He's going to keep playing, though, and he's debating between three employers, and the Redskins are one of them. How confident are they that they might be able to get him when he makes that decision this week?
I don't know. I think it depends if he really wants a ring or not. If he's looking for a ring, then I think Seattle's the obvious choice. If he wants to continue with Ron and try to build something here, this would make sense. The Skins are also the closest to Charlotte, which is where his family is based. That's really a pretty easy trip. And then if you kind of look at best of both worlds would be Buffalo, where they have a good young team, and maybe they could be ready to make a jump. They made the playoffs this past year, and they have kind of that Carolina culture with Sean McDermott up there. I don't think he lands in Washington. I think Washington should offer him the most because they have the biggest need. I also think he still might end up in the booth. He's so good. I watched him in the post game of the Super Bowl, and somebody that does TV, it's crazy how good he is at it.
Jack Palance, Finley, real quick, what happens with Trent?
I think he comes back, but I think we get an idea of what's actually going to happen next week in Indy. Maybe the trade is still the best route there. I don't know, but if I had to guess, I would say he's playing for the Skins this fall.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, fellas.
Let's talk hockey. Two games, two losses for the Caps over the weekend, who are 500 over the last 20 games. That's almost a quarter of a season. That's not very good. They've got the fewest points in their division in that time. Even the Devils have more. J.J. Reagan covers that team for NBC Sports Washington. J.J., you tell us, how much concern should there be right now?
I mean, there should be a good amount of concern because, as you mentioned, 11-11 in the last 22 games. We've gone past the point of just saying, okay, let them play their way out of it. This is a prolonged slump. They are not as bad as played of late, but clearly more is needed coaching and from the leaders of this team to to get themselves out of it, because it's just not going to come naturally at this point. It shows some of the underlying issues with this team, namely defensively, and changes are needed for them to rebound from this.
Jake Johansson, Reagan, what are those changes? We hear the players talking about the same things over and over again. That says to me there's something kind of broken in the chain of command or communication-wise. Something seems amiss.
Sure. Something definitely seems amiss. I mean, a lot of people will blame the coach's system, but just looking at last night, there's no system that both defensemen should be caught on the same side of the ice on a breakaway attempt. There's no system that says that Radko Gudas should get the puck stolen from behind the net and it ends up in a goal before Braden Holtby even knows there's a problem. I mean, that's not a system. That's frustration. But the bigger problems is that this defense just is not good enough for the Capitals to go where they need to. And that's where something like the line comes in. We have heard Brian McClellan talking about how he would look for maybe some depth moves. I think over the course of 22 games now, looking at how this team plays defensively, I think that has gone from maybe we add some depth to this team needs to add an impact player on the blue line if it wants to still contend for the Stanley Cup.
They've lost two in a row and four of five, and you said there are defensive issues. There are also goal-scoring problems. They've got four goals just once, I think, in their last six now. J.J., Todd Reirden has his work cut out for him here. Look, bounce this off, you see what you think. He had a successful year taking over for Barry Trotz last season and that the team won the division. And if not for some injuries, they probably get out of the first round. I don't know, you know, how you could have been upset with him after no Oshie and no Kempney was a killer for them against the Canes. But this is real adversity, and we're about to find out just how good a coach he is, I think. So they got to make some adjustments back at this point, no?
Yeah, as I said before, you can't just expect their way out of it. They're going to need some adjustments, and that comes from the coaching. The problem is that while this team has a lot of talent, it's not as deep as it once was. You don't have an Andrei Burakovsky twiddling his thumbs on the third line that you can pull to the top six. I mean, you're looking at shuffling the lines. Are you going to move Carl Hagelin up, who has no offensive finish? Are you going to move up Richard Panik? I mean, there may be a riot in D.C. if that ends up happening. So the options for the coach are limited in terms of shuffling lines. There are things you can do, but in terms of that, those things are limited. It's going to take some coaching, some closed door meetings in the scenes to get them out of this. I don't think it's as simple as shuffling the lines, although I wouldn't mind seeing that at this point.
Jordan James Reagan, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
Let's talk some defenders. We'll bring our buddy Chris Russell on to do that very thing. Russell, the defenders have the best point differential in the entirety of the XFL. I ask you, are they the best team?
Yeah, I mean, the best team that I've seen. Best team since, almost halftime of the first game. They've been absolutely dominant since that point. And it's not just on offense, as we know. It's also on defense. Now, it helps when Matt McGloin absolutely sucks and the Guardians' offensive line is brutal. But I was told in the first game, before I even saw much of this team, that the defensive line would be the strength, and so far that seems to be absolutely true. They added to it via trade on Friday night, and that was pretty much true on Saturday afternoon. Again, it helps that they've played some very, very, very pedestrian offenses so far, so we'll see what happens if they get tested a little bit more by a better offense.
Cardale Jones looks like one of the two best quarterbacks in this league. Is it as simple as if you got a legit QB, you got a shot to maybe win this thing?
Sure. I think like the NFL, right? I mean, a good quarterback can overcome a lot of things or negatives or mistakes or penalties or turnovers. It always starts with a good quarterback being able to overcome some mistakes. Now, fortunately for them, they haven't made that many mistakes. So that helps. And they seem to be really good in terms of overall balance, right? We just talked about the defense. We know the special teams has been a thing. They felt confident enough that they were so good on defense that they traded Sylvie, the kid that had the pick six in week one, and they still got a pick six in week two. So as long as they stay reasonably healthy, and Carter, I will tell you this. I don't know, Grant, you've been at, obviously, in calling these games. The thing that has kind of jumped out to me the most on offense is the amount of trick plays and the amount of creativity from Pep Hamilton. I was not expecting old Pep to be as creative as he has been in design and execution and calls.
Must have been hard for you. Nobody establishing the run or anything like that. Appreciate the time, buddy. We'll talk soon.
I'm just fine if people don't establish the run.
We'll see you, buddy.
Thank you, Slashy. That's a large departure from what we're used to from Chris Russell. 2-0 after a 27-0 shutout of the New York Guardians for the Defenders. We'll talk about the XFL's second week in just a few. We'll also get into the developing reaction to Rob Manfred's embarrassing interview where he said that he didn't take away the championship from the Astros because it's just a piece of metal. I'm paraphrasing. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Do not. We know that. But in the NFL, people are more willing to watch the bad game. That is, let's say, last year, the Bengals and the Jets. In the XFL, you need to basically reward people for watching. I think they turn on the TV and they want to see athleticism. They want to see quality football. And I don't think they're going to just sit there with teams that don't have a history and players they don't particularly care about and watch quarterbacks missing open receivers and low-scoring games, because synonymous with the quality of the game is the score, which I don't agree with, but this is how simpletons and average people think. I got a lot of tweets from people going, it's 9-6 in the fourth quarter. That's terrible. Okay, I suppose. I mean, by the way, it's not on field goals. It's touchdowns, and they do their extra points differently. But a lot of people think if you score a lot of points, the game was great. If you don't score any points, the game was bad, and that's as far as they go. But points do help. And it adds excitement. You hear there on that touchdown that the stadium was going crazy. And I really believe there was a story written, I think it was Michael David Smith of PFT, this weekend where he talked about XFL quarterback play. And basically you watch one game and the quarterbacks are playing well and you think, this league can fly. But then you watch a guy like Matt McGloin, who was just horrendous for the New York Guardians in D.C. and getting shut out this weekend before getting benched in the fourth quarter. And you think, man, they really need to probably get better quarterbacks if this is going to attract a larger audience.
I think it's a very salient point that Michael David Smith makes. So in D.C., we're spoiled here. Cardale Jones has been as effective or, you know, maybe he's one or two depending on your rankings with the Houston quarterback. No coincidence that they're 2-0 as well.
He's got Jones, I'm talking about, 511 passing yards through two games, which leads the league, 4 touchdowns and 1 pick, a 102 rating. The other of the best quarterbacks and like MVP candidates in the league you mentioned from Houston is P.J. Walker. He played at Temple, smaller guy. He can run. I hate to use this comp, but what people are saying is he's kind of becoming like the XFL's Lamar Jackson, just in the sense that he runs all over the place. He makes plays with his feet, with his arm, 7 touchdowns, 1 pick. And there's one other quarterback who's been really, really good, and that's Jordan Ta'amu from St. Louis. Those three guys have been awesome. Other than those three, though, there are 5 other quarterbacks who have been, you know, not good enough and one who's been horrendous. That's the majority of the league.
And so the NFL has a shortage of these guys. So it would stand to reason a secondary league is going to be even more, you know, desperate for enough guys that can do this. They only make so many of these dudes on the planet that can do this job. It's a really hard one. And if you can do it semi-competently, you make $30 million a year. That's kind of the new normal. So in the NFL, I think you mentioned a really good point that I want to grab a hold of and expound upon. In the NFL, we have meaning behind the games. In other words, when Buffalo plays the Jets, there's an established fan base, there's stadiums, there are rules, there's history for everybody. We know the name Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas. We know Joe Namath. These teams have existed for a long time. You can go with ups and downs, and you're still going to be a fan of the team and of the sport. You can watch a lower level play. Florida, Georgia could play. Florida could have the worst quarterback situation in the world, which has happened, by the way, recently with them. And they could be awful, but Florida and Georgia, that's existed for 100 years, and that matters. You can ride out some of these bad times where you don't have good enough quarterback play to compete. LSU, for example. Before Joe Burrow, this was the black hole of quarterbacking. And yet, 120,000 people are going to show up and watch them play Alabama when they're down there in the swamp. You don't have the established relationships here. So it's one of those things, and it's not fair, by the way, but just sort of trying to quantify it. If people are putting eyeballs on you for the first time, the expectations are probably higher than they should be in order for them to be satisfied, right? You can watch a college football game between Auburn and Alabama, and Auburn's got terrible quarterback play in a given year, but you understand the Iron Bowl means something. Same with Michigan, Ohio State, et cetera. You don't have that with St. Louis playing L.A. at this point, right? So the threshold's unfair, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and so that's the part I don't quite understand. I agree with you 1,000%. It's just not how I'm programmed.
Right.
You know, for me, the AFL, when it was the Arena Football League with the Washington Valor, forget me calling those games. I would go there and I would watch one of those games, and I'd sit there and I could enjoy that. Dudes trying to extend their career. One or two of these guys might get into the NFL. That would be cool. It's just it's a football game for a couple of hours. I can watch that. I can enjoy that. I don't need a history. I don't need to know all those other things. I stop and I'll watch a high school football game at a high school I didn't go to or care about without any D1 prospects on a Friday night, and I can watch and enjoy that. People need different payoffs, though, than I do. So I understand what you're saying. But same with the Alliance of American Football. The debate is the quality of the game and is the football good. And you know, a lot of people have made up their minds before they turn on the TV because it's not the highest level. I don't want to watch this. But I think for most of us that are kind of waiting and seeing, like before the season started, we were I don't even know if we were joking, but we were saying in studio, we were talking about what would LSU be favored over the Defenders? You know, how many would they beat them by? Having watched them play 2 times, the Defenders beat LSU. I'm confident in that. Now, LSU has the 6 or so best players in the game. Joe Burrow and, you know, first-round picks this year and next year and second-round picks, what have you. But the depth of the roster, I don't even think it's that close, to be honest with you. When you're talking about, like, guy 50 for the Defenders, who's been with 4 NFL teams and played in 3 preseasons and 9 preseason games or whatever, and guy 50 at LSU, I'll give you an example. Nick Brosette was an excellent running back at LSU his last year there. He played behind Darius Geis and then got a shot. He's the 4th running back on this depth chart. He's behind a guy who led the Alliance of American Football in rushing. He's behind a guy who was a 4-time All-American. He's behind a guy in Donnell Pumphrey when he left college, who was the all-time leading rusher in NCAA. He was basically the 2nd or 3rd running back for the Defenders. So my point is just like Malachi Dupree, really good college player at LSU. He's one of 4 receivers that gets targeted semi-frequently and is probably going to end up being the 3rd receiver this year in terms of targets and catches for the Defenders, if not the 4th. So the quality of football, comping it to high-end college, the game's a little faster. It's nowhere near the NFL. Nobody's saying that. It's basically NFL preseason level stuff, genuinely. But I think it is better, certainly, than I expected when I was saying, yeah, I think LSU might have a chance to beat them. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Now, some people have just decided before they turn it on, it's not very good. You know, I get tweets from these people every weekend, and that's cool. If you're rooting against it, good for you. I hope you get whatever you want, and it shuffles.
I hope you're happy.
And it shuts down, and no, you know, all these people lose jobs or whatever your goal is for whatever reason. But six NFL games, there's not been a quarterback with a 300-yard passing performance, is one of the nuggets here. XFL quarterbacks have collectively thrown as many interceptions as touchdown passes, basically like a one-to-one ratio. Not ideal. In the NFL last season, there were almost twice as many touchdown passes as interceptions. Football fans enjoy the quarterback-driven game that the NFL has become. The XFL is not providing that. That's not just on the quarterbacks. I'd say predominantly they don't have the quarterback talent you'd like. But Cardale Jones hasn't thrown for 300 either. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is also the league itself. It is the fact that there are no blitz rules and the offensive lines are not as good as the NFL. That's the biggest difference and discrepancy. It's that you're 2 weeks into this thing where they haven't been on the grass that much. You know, where they didn't practice that much. So some of that could still be coming in terms of timing and whatever
else. Sure, offense is getting on the same page.
But yeah, you've got Jones, who's legit, P.J. Walker, who's a stud, Jordan Tamu, who looks like he can play. And after that, I mean, the quarterbacks drop off. Aaron Murray's been bad. McGloin's been bad. Landry Jones just made his debut. I guess here's the question for you guys at 800-636-1067. Whether you're one of the people donning defender's gear holding a shield at Audi Field on the weekend or watching these games or not, is it as simple as saying quarterback play will make or break this league? And what can they do to try to get quarterbacks into this league that people will want to see? They obviously contacted Tim Tebow. I'd imagine they contacted Colin Kaepernick. Now, they want those mass appeal eyeball players that are going to be lightning rods for controversy
attention,
and turmoil,
right?
And attention dollars. But this is what they've been able to get so far, is guys who have won national championships and had college success who haven't made it in the NFL. 800-636-1067 is the number. Your thoughts on the XFL so far through 2 weeks, the quarterback performances, and what moving forward we need to see from that position if this is going to work. G&D on the Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan, and we thank you as always for listening. Craig Lachlan, who is the broadcast partner of Joe Beninati on Caps games for NBC Sports Washington, will be with us at 12:45 today. The Caps lost back-to-back games over the weekend. They can't score goals right now, and they have fallen apart defensively, and they are 500 over their last 22 games, about a quarter way of the year now, where they have played really poorly, and they are the worst team in their division over that stretch. They're going to make the playoffs, we know that, and they're going to be a handful for somebody when they do, but they got to get right, because if the Penguins win tonight, they've been caught. They'll be second in the Metro for the first time in over 120 days. Think about that.
Yeah, man. It's the lead they got off to was insurmountable until it wasn't, right? Just this swoon has coincided with Pittsburgh playing great, and other teams have started to really pick up business. Tampa Bay can't lose, it seems like. The only team that Pittsburgh loses to is Tampa.
We'll talk to Locker about the Caps coming up in a little over 10 minutes. Your thoughts on the on-field element of the XFL so far, the quality of the play. By the way, you know who's leading the XFL in rushing?
No.
Matt Jones, former Redskin great.
Oh.
Now, that's because he runs the ball more than everybody else.
3.5 yards a pop, it says right here.
Yeah, he's got 37 attempts for a .130.
I know what that looks like.
But yeah, he has been really good. And then I'd say the best running back so far that I've seen is your guy Cameron Artis Payne from Auburn, who played with the Panthers and Ron Rivera. He plays for Dallas. He's averaging over 6 per carry. He's been really good. But quarterback play, according to a lot of folks this weekend, when they were watching games, was discouraging. And you got people like Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk saying, this is how this league will work or won't. I think that's oversimplified. I think fan interest is going to be why it works or it doesn't. You know, television deals, which they struck with ABC, with ESPN, that keeps these leagues afloat. Like, people are asking silly questions like, well, this lasts a season. I don't see how it wouldn't. I mean, you got 30,000 people at the Sounders Stadium in Seattle, at the Seahawks Stadium, whatever the hell they call it now. What is that place? It's been like
Quest Park?
Quest Field. I think they may have changed it.
Quest Park?
I don't know.
Park?
But yeah, they had 29,000 people come watch them in Seattle this weekend. Mm-hmm. Attendance, quote unquote, was up because of that. Let's go to Wendell in Springfield. How are you?
Hey, Wendell.
Hey, guys. I think it's CenturyLink with Seattle. But
there you go. CenturyLink. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed, though, with the product again this week and the league overall. Quarterback play, I took away that P.J. Walker. He, to me, is showing that you are moving away from the traditional statue back there, that you kind of need a guy with mobility, just the way the league's trending. But it's pros all over this league, both in coaching, guys on the field as the ex-pros. I think the league is going to smash it, in my opinion. Now, you are talking to a guy, too, who enjoys preseason football. So that might have a little, spew my opinion a little bit to other people. But I think the quarterback play is kind of where I expected, to even Danny's point, that you get good quarterback play and bad quarterback play even in college and even in the pros. So, NFL. So,
yeah, there's not 32 high-end quarterbacks on the planet that can start for all the NFL teams. So when you have another league, that's going to be the case. You hope, ideally, that you're working against DBs and linebackers and, you know, defensive scheming that kind of isn't as good, so that your game raises, which has happened with, say, Cardale Jones, who's going to be better in this league than he would be in the NFL. But, you know, the fact is that the skill positions, I was talking to Logan Paulson about this, and maybe we can get him on later in the week to discuss this, Danny. He's been so impressed by the receivers and the DBs and the linebackers and the running backs and things. He doesn't think there's that huge of a talent drop-off at the skill positions for the good skill groups in the XFL. Obviously, the line play, you know, the O-line, that's where, I'll just throw this out there, if like the defenders played the Redskins, right? The reason the Redskins would destroy them is because of the Redskins' defensive line going against a non-NFL offensive line. That's where you can't really simulate it. It's like varsity and JV.
But they make a lot of guys that are 6'2", 200 that can run.
Exactly.
They make that.
The skill guys in the XFL have really, really impressed. And there's just great athletes, man. And there are guys who have played. I've called these 2 weeks. I'm looking down at my notes. This guy played 72 games in the NFL. This guy played 31 games the last 3 seasons. They're just trying to get back into the league.
So I think it's oversimplified to say this will make or break things. But I will say, just discussing the actual point of quarterback play as it relates to the XFL sustainability, the easiest way to be sustainable is if you've got good quarterback play. Does that make sense? Like, that's your cheat code. That's your quick path to having this league gain momentum. Because if some first-timer tunes in and it looks kind of like it does during the NFL season, a.k.a. you drop back, the ball comes out early, teams are moving up and down the field, points get scored, you know, your games are 30-27 and it's back and forth and it's an offensive game, and it looks like what I'm used to on Sundays with all my gambling, my fantasy football, my DFS and everything else, then yeah, it's an approximation. It's now filling that void. But if you don't have that, you've got to be great in other areas. And it sounds like the XFL is still sort of getting its feet wet in those areas, right? In terms of it's got the television contract and everything. In DC, we're very happy. It's a 2-0 team. Well, what if we were Tampa Bay? What if it was an 0-2 group that looks like they have no chance? They've got no shot at this. Would we be saying the same things about how great this league is, right? The defenders can't play it themselves. So there's two sides to every coin. But to me, the most important thing about this discussion that Michael David Smith brings up on Pro Football Talk is, no, this won't make or break the league entirely. It's a factor, certainly, right? Is getting good quarterback play and good offense to sort of get the average fan to tune in. But it is the quickest way. It's the easiest way. If you find 8 guys that can do it in this game, then it's going to look like it does on Sundays to the naked eye.
Let's go to Sean in Bethesda on the Fan. What's up, Sean? How are you?
Doing great, guys. How are you doing?
Buddy.
Good.
So I think that instead of maybe focusing so much on the quarterback play, I think what would really make this league more exciting to watch is if we had coaches doing a better job with play calling. I mean, they have the rules a little bit different than in the NFL, and I think that they should try to expand on the difference, draw up more trick plays. They have those 2 passes that they can use in the backfield, and I want to see more of that.
Oh,
appreciate you.
I thought there was going to be more there. That's what that was.
I guess that's the end of the road. Yeah, I don't think you've watched the local team. Maybe the rest of the XFL you're talking about. I mean, they did the first double pass in the XFL this weekend, where there was a pass, double pass, you know, tap pass backfield, keeps running to the end of the line of scrimmage, stops, throws back to Cardale Jones, who threw downfield for a huge completion. They had a touchdown last week to the tight end Corey Lee, where they legitimately basically handed it off to a jet guy in motion, who tossed for a reverse coming back the other way, who then tossed back to the quarterback who looped behind the formation, who threw the ball down inside the 10-yard line. Never seen that play before. In fact, Logan Paulson, who played 10 years in the NFL, said he's never seen that design in a playbook before. So to say that there's no creativity with the new rules, the team locally that plays a mile from where we're sitting or less, the last 2 weeks refutes that. Now, should there be more of it around the league? Perhaps. I mean, maybe you got guys that need to dig into their playbooks a little bit more. But I've actually really liked that part of it. I think so far Pep Hamilton has gotten Q cute and creative and done some neat things with the passing game. Let's go to Josh in D.C. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Coach Pep is really killing them out there.
He's been great, man. He really has impressed me.
Yeah, Dirty, did you check out the broadcast this weekend?
Oh, no, I didn't.
By Grant? Oh, okay. That's
you
crazy.
Can ask him that every week. The answer is going to be the same.
I like Grant very much, and I hope it goes great.
Oh, man, he did great. But I think the product has and the quarterbacks have a great chance of getting better. Just like week one, and you didn't see a lot of good tackling. People weren't making tackles, but it got better week two. So I think the quarterback play, I mean, we only seen a handful of quarterbacks. You don't know what the guys on the bench have and, you know, things like that. So I think the quarterbacks will definitely end up getting better. Well, as the season and the years.
Stand to reason, right, with some reps and some time working together?
Yeah, they had less training camp. They've had way fewer practices than your traditional NFL teams have 2 weeks into their season. So I think just from a timing standpoint and getting to know these receivers and working with them more and more, then the offenses look more fluid. The passing games will get better. But there is a ceiling with these guys. Like Matt McGloin, just as an example, in the NFL would not be a quarterback. That's a starter, and maybe wouldn't be a backup. Like, there are probably 64 guys in the NFL better than him. So my point would be he might get better as the year goes along. He needs to. But if he's still the 77th best quarterback on the planet, that there's so much he can improve upon before he maxes out. They got to find a way, I think, to attract. I don't want it to be a dog and pony show, but like a guy who had some NFL success or like a Tebow type that would move the needle just for people like you who won't watch otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, you know, maybe focus less on that and just on high-end talent. Like the best college quarterbacks who went to the combine, who aren't under contract right now, you call all of them. And I think if they're watching the telecast, those players would want to participate. How could you not? I mean, this is ABC, this is ESPN, these are the big networks.
The coup is going to be when they get an underclassman that's good enough to come out but can't because of the rules to play a year in the XFL. That's going to be the coup.
I can't see that happening. Maybe it will. It would definitely be a big deal for them. Craig Lachlan calls Caps games each and every time they take the ice. What is going on with this team? He'll tell us next on The Fan. Every Tuesday at 12:45, the great Craig Lachlan joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. And our segments to get educated on the Caps are presented by American Standard Heating and Air. Find your local contractor at midatlanticcomfort.com. Locker, times are not necessarily fun right now for the Caps. Back-to-back losses. You were on the call out west during this road trip, and you've now seen this team drop 4 out of 5. Pick the word that best fits here. Should we be nervous? Should we be scared? Should we be a bit concerned, or is everything okay?
Probably concerned, your last one there, Grant. I think when you look at it, you know, last Tuesday when I was on with you guys, I said it's been consistency has been a real issue and that there was concern. Anytime you're 11-11 in the last 22, you haven't put your best foot forward. I will say this. I'll give you the negatives. Poor defense in the neutral zone. The power play, just okay. The penalty killing, just okay. The positive, probably Braden Holtby coming to be Braden Holtby, starting to turn his game around, and some of the young guys starting to play again, like Verona, who played great, I thought, yesterday in Vegas. I think there's some guys, though, that just aren't playing well. They've got to shore up their defense, and to me, it's a consistency issue because if you watch closely, the Capitals in this 3-game, 9-period road trip that they had, I would say they played 3 great periods. So that means 6 were very so-so. You play 6 poor or so-so periods, you're going to lose. And they have to find their game. You know, I think the 3rd period in Vegas proved the point that when they play their game, they play hard. I remember a coach that used to coach in Philadelphia, Fred Shiro, the Fog, who took them to their new 2 national Stanley Cups back in the 70s. Well, he actually joined the Caps during one of our runs to start I think in 83, he sort of was a consultant, and he always had a saying, take the shortest route to the puck and arrive in ill humor. And to me, that saying best fits the Caps when they are playing at their best, like they did in the 3rd. It's a hard game to play, but for the Caps to have wins and to be successful, they're going to have to play that way.
Locker, educate me and our listeners here. You mentioned the defense. I'll never see the game the way that you're capable of, A, as an analyst, B, as a player. But it seems like it's just too easy for teams to get up and down against them. There's too much space. Is that a defenseman issue? Is that a forwards issue? Not pinching back? Is it not enough forecheck? Just help us understand what we're watching here, because it just seems to me, and I think a lot of Caps fans, it's too easy for their opponents for such extended periods.
Danny, I think it's a combination of what you just said. I think, you know, you can't put the blame all on the forwards. You can't put the blame all on the D. It's, to me, working together. Back when the Caps were playing well, and you'll see this if you watch closely when we see a full shot of the rink during the game, the big telltale sign is, are there five guys in the shot? That is the key. So defensively, if there's five guys in the D zone, that's good. If there's five guys in the neutral zone, that's good. If there's five guys in the offensive zone, that's good. So to me, it all comes down to units of five. You can see when they're playing poorly, case in point, the two breakaways they allowed last game. Well, the guy steps up from behind the net, hits a guy at the far blue line, and he's got a breakaway. But if you looked at the gap between the forwards who are trying to establish a forecheck and the D who were right around center, that's a huge gap to play with. Too much. If the three forwards had been at the blue line, the two defensemen at center, then you have five guys in the same area. And to me, that's missing. The forwards are going, the D aren't. A good analogy would be this. When you're watching the game, if the three forwards are at the far blue line on the attack, if the Caps D are coming over center, that's a good thing. If the Caps D are still at the far blue line trying to come out of their zone, that's too big of a gap. So I use the lines as a measure of good defense. If you see guys and it's got to be all five within that area, the Caps are playing well. When they're not, they're going to be exposed.
Craig Lachlan on Grant and Danny every Tuesday at 12:45. Locker, you look at the Eastern Conference standings. The Caps were running away with what looked to be maybe a President's Trophy, but certainly the top spot in the East for a while. They now have 79 points. They are actually 7 behind Boston of the Atlantic. They are 6 behind the Lightning, who have won 11 in a row. But they're also, in their own division in the Metro, only 1 point better than the Penguins, who have 2 games in hand. So that basically they're behind Pittsburgh, who play tonight. If the Penguins win tonight, they move ahead of the Caps. They've been caught by 3 teams. I mean, obviously the Bruins and the Lightning have been better over a couple of months, so have the Penguins been. But how do they stack up with those teams, you know, if they can get their act together going into the playoffs?
That's the big key there, Grant. You know, if they get their act together, and to me, to a man, they know what they have to do. It's a hard brand of hockey. And to me, they were probably cruising down the highway, thinking they're in charge, thinking that, you know what, we've got a good lead here in the Metropolitan. And sometimes you so-called say, take your foot off the gas. And that's what's happened. So now, do I have confidence they can find their game? Yes, because there's 20-some games left. That's fine. But they're going to have to go on a high note. Right now, they're in the doldrums big time. I think they've slipped in their game overall, their play overall. Some guys aren't playing up to where they were earlier on in the season. Some of the systems are flawed because they're not in proper position. You know, everyone says sports is a game of inches. Well, it is in hockey, too. And the five-man unit that Reardon and those guys were trying to put together, and they got better defensively, guys. You know, look at, they're not scoring 5-on-5, but they haven't allowed a whole lot of 5-on-5 goals. So that's a positive. That means they're covering home plate. And to me, their offense starts in the D zone. When they're clean getting out of the zone, they're such a much better team. They can throw that pill around. They can skate with speed. They're getting the puck at full stride, and right now they're not. Is there a concern? Yes, because you need all those things now to be back in order. But as a coach and as a player, you can only work at one thing at a time. You don't want to overwhelm your team and say, oh, we got to do this, 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 and this, and give a litany and a long list of things. You've got to go back to the basics and start with D-zone first, which is what they're doing. So I saw a positive on that on the road, not allowing a whole lot of 5-on-5 goals. Now the next segment is, how do they defend in the neutral zone, and how do they get faster? Then, to me, the fun zone is the offensive zone. The Caps are highly skilled. But, yeah, they're being chased down because the other teams have hit their high in a different era, a different period of this season.
Locker, you're the best, buddy. Let's talk next week, man.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Always love learning from Craig Lachlan, presented by American Standard Heating and Air. Find your local contractor at midatlanticcomfort.com. We thought Cody Bellinger was going to be the player that went the hardest against the Astros. Turns out he was just the first guy to go hard in the paint. There have been several other players who have absolutely lambasted them over the last few days. We'll go through some of the comments next on GD.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.